You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. Alan Cardoza is out on assignment somewhere across the world, and hopefully he'll be back with us next week as we bring you Answers for the Family, where we bring you answers and options to raising a child in this ever-changing world. We deal with issues such as teen runaway, substance abuse, how to take care of yourself as parents and caretakers of the children, as well as building self-esteem and self-reliance and just having a creating the world that they want, all here on Answers for the Family. Now today I'm very excited because we have a fun creative guest today. Her name is Carla Sondheim. She is the author of Drawing Lab, and that's one of her previous books, but we're going to be talking today about the art of stillness. Now, Carla is an artist and creativity workshop instructor known for her fun and innovative projects and techniques, and a popular teacher for Art Fest and Art and Soul and similar workshop venues, as well as online courses. And she also specializes in helping adult students recover a more childlike play approach to creating. And as one of her students put it, being in your workshop is like being a kid again, but we get to do it as an adult. Now, Carla's paintings are also showcased in numerous galleries nationwide, as well as in private and corporate collections around the world. And this new book of hers called The Art of Silliness, it's called a creativity book for everyone. I thought it was so appropriate today for a holiday. And Carla, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to have you on board. And I have to tell you, when I heard about the book title, The Art of Silliness, and that you were going to be our guest today, I was so looking forward to the book. But I was expecting, I guess I was expecting a book talking about the art and the science of silliness and how to do that. And I got your book, and I'm going, oh, this is a fun book.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, I'm not an academic in any way. So this is definitely a creativity book. And yes, I leave the art and science of silliness to someone else.
Yeah, but I think it's so important, though, because, you know, our young adults and even our teenagers, they're so serious these days. And I think it would be so great to be able to, you know, bring some more of that silliness and get in touch with that child within, whether they're still a child at the age of 8 or if they're 80 years old, a grandparent, per se.
That's right. I started out teaching children, and when I started teaching adults, it was just a heartbreak to see how fearful they were of drawing and putting marks on paper and everything, and the contrast to the younger children was just so striking that I started teaching adults in the same way, you know, keep it fun, keep it silly, and it really helped lighten these adult students up, and also older elementary and middle school and high school students as well when I would guest teach in those arenas.
Well, you know, in the teaching and all that, but I'm just wondering, you know, how does being silly make us more creative, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I think that creativity is all about making strange and unexpected connections. So, for example, if somebody is given a problem at work and they are, you know, asked to involve a certain speaker and, you know, and these two different kinds of speakers, if they can make a connection between somebody that's going to talk on, you know, silliness and somebody that's going to talk on, you know, some kind of DNA thing, you've got to kind of work to have a creative connection. And there's always one. Life is just one of those things that totally works together. And somehow getting to that silly side, that kind of kids, fresh, non-judgmental, from that place, it allows those strange connections to occur more naturally.
Well, I think you hit a key word in there, non-judgmental, because I think
yes.
We as adults or even teenagers are so self-conscious about what other people think about what we're doing. I mean, how do you break that barrier of not caring and just have fun with it?
Yeah. Well, I have to be honest and say that I don't think you ever lose that fear completely. I mean, that is one of the things that happens when you turn into an adolescent or adult, since you grow up and you're more self-conscious and everything. And you could probably speak more to this with your therapy background, but it feels to me that as an adult, it would be almost impossible to get back to how you were when you were 4 years old or 5 years old. The fear never goes away completely, the fear of what people will think and all that. But you can minimize it. You can set it aside. I always think of, the critic in my head as being somebody that needs to sit in the corner of the room and just be quiet. Like, I know I can't banish that inner critic completely. It's just, in all my years of being creative, I still have it. But he or she can sit in the corner and just, read a book while I'm doing my thing. And that's all I'm trying to do, is help people. That's sort of what I have been doing, is helping people deal with that inner critic, that inner judgmental part, and just set it aside for a moment. May come back at different times when you're tired or hungry or, trying something new. But you can definitely minimize it.
Yeah, well, I know on the title of your book it says draw, doodle, and play for 10 minutes a day. And, your drawings in here are very fun and very silly. And the doodling, I think doodling is so important. I actually prescribe that for a lot of people sit and doodle, because it helps them concentrate and listen to what other thing, using a different part of their mind while they're kinetically doodling and doing something creative with their own hands or whatever comes out.
Yes, it's an amazing, wonderful and fun thing to have something come out through your hand. I have an 18-month-old grandson, and when I had him with a pencil one day, and every time he'd make a mark, he'd say, "Yes!" And I just thought that was such a wonderful kind of metaphor or, example of really how primitive it is, a joy to make marks on paper or in the dirt or in the sand or anything.
Hopefully not the walls.
Walls are okay too. You just, walls are great, but eventually if you move out of your house, you'd probably have to paint it over.
Yeah, so the ultimate of creativity, being able to design your own walls in your own room. Actually, that would be quite kind of fun.
Well, I've had artist friends come in and collaborate with my sons to draw on their bedroom walls, and then it's just a matter of priming it and getting rid of it, making sure to document it, and then getting rid of it at the end. Everything. I have no problem with walls.
Well, as an artist, you would not. I all I could think of is my mom would say, "Be careful with the markers near the walls."
Yes.
Or the floor, or anywhere else where it might bleed over and make a stain. So let's get back to the fun stuff, the silliness. I know there's one page in your book which I love, because just all little loop-de-loops all across the page. And I'm thinking, well, that's what I do a lot. I do a lot of loop-de-loops and circles and end up making lots of flowers or things, whatever, while I'm doodling. And what is your favorite thing to doodle? You have so many different creative ideas in here.
Yes, well, I go through phases, so it seems like, I'll go through a phase where I like to draw faces, and then a phase where I like to draw animals. I've definitely been in that phase recently. When I just doodle, like doodle on the phone kind of thing, I do a lot of circles, a lot of flowers, kind of flower shapes. And that is really interesting, I think, to find out what your doodle language is. When you're in a meeting or on the phone or doing something, where your mind is engaged elsewhere as well, some of the natural things will come out, and you can learn a lot from your doodles. For example, if you tend to be really scribbly, that is one way that you probably should or could approach drawing and be quite successful at it, because it's your natural tendency. And if you tend to be really neat with your doodles, you might be drawn more towards drawing that's more realistic pencil drawings or things like that. So often your doodles can tell you what is your natural sort of drawing DNA.
Well, where would somebody get started to learn the art of silliness, on top of buying your book? Because it's a great little book.
Well, yes, I one of the main things is it feels silly to take time to draw a little animal or whatever. You know, it feels like a waste of time. I've spent the morning doing these little collage giraffes to work on that have to do with one of my online classes, and it took a lot of sort of willpower for me to start and a little bit of accountability and, you know, all these things. And so I think that the best thing that you can do to, you know, start, you know, getting sewing this into your life a little bit is try to find a way, an easy entry point for yourself. And the book can be that for a lot of people, but just anything could be that. I mean, it could be just, you know, listening to a certain set of songs in the mornings while doodling, or, you know, it doesn't have to be long. 10 minutes is fine, and if at 10 minutes you need to get on with your day, that's great, but it does seem to really help to just take that little mm-hmm. time. And everyone's different, so everyone will find their own entry point, but mm-hmm. As long as it's easy, fun, and there's no barriers in place, it's more likely you'll do it.
Yeah, and in your book, you have a way to get people started, like one of the first exercises is called Draw This Bird a Zillion Times, and basically use your non-dominant hand, your eyes closed or both, you say, and just for 5 continuous minutes just keep drawing the same bird. How does that yes. work in your doodling exercises or learning to doodle and draw?
Well, that exercise is wonderful because if you do it with your eyes closed, you have very little control of what the drawing's going to look like. And so you just kind of have to go with it. And when you open your eyes, most of the drawings are just nonsense. But every once in a while, you'll have lucked into a bird that's really, really cute and way cuter than you would have drawn on your own, right? And the same with using your non-dominant hand. The shakiness of your non-dominant hand can create drawings that are much more real and honest than ones done with your dominant hand, at least in the beginning as you're learning how to sort of see and put marks to paper. I think that taking it away from your dominant hand or even closing your eyes can help you to focus more on the process rather than the product.
Okay.
And ironically, it the product ends up turning out a little more human, because we as humans are very, very imperfect, mm-hmm. and these non-dominant hand drawings are imperfect as well, and so people tend to respond to them a little better. Also, you're drawing what you see or remember instead mm-hmm. of what you think you see, and that's a common thing for new drawers is, you know, they're like, okay, I'm going to draw a teddy bear, and they have a teddy bear in front of them, but they end up drawing what a teddy bear looks like in their head rather than really looking.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the exercises, including the non-dominant hand one, is meant to slow them down so that they really kind of are looking at what they're drawing.
Right. And I know as a therapist, we sometimes if we do inner child work or whatever, we have people use their non-dominant hand because that's the side that is less judgmental, the less adult side of the way you should or shouldn't do things. It just comes out however it comes out.
Yes. Some of my favorite artwork out there is artwork. I've just lost her name, but she's an animal artist out of the UK, and she taught herself to draw with her non-dominant hand, and meaning she loved the cragginess of the non-dominant hand, and her art has a very distinctive and wonderful look because of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we talked about doodling a moment ago. But why should it be a mandatory exercise for everyone every day? Because you talk about that.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's mandatory. I don't think I said that, that it was mandatory. But I do think that if you do indulge in that little childlike side every day, your day's it's like a more well-oiled day, kind mm-hmm. of. laugh at yourself. You know, do something that's just absolutely horrible. It puts everything in perspective. You know, it's only pen and paper, and then you can move on with your day, and maybe other things can be seen with that sort of just taking it a little more loosely. That's mm-hmm. the car that cuts you off and things like that.
Yeah, and one of the next exercises you have in the book is called Draw Upside Down. But what I like about it is you write, for now, just do your best. Really look at the bird shape as you draw. Keep the hand loose and remember to breathe.
Yes, the breathing. Yes, if anybody out there wants to draw and they felt frustrated drawing, I'm probably pretty sure that you were holding your breath, and everybody feels frustrated when they are holding their breath too long. Uh-huh. So if ever you'd like to draw something, just remember to keep breathing, because it's sort of natural to sort of hold your breath, and then everybody starts getting uncomfortable and lightheaded.
Oh, well, we don't want to be passing out.
When I teach live, I can actually feel it in the room, and when I remind people to breathe, there's this collective gasp and giggles and laughter, and I can just feel this sort of tension of people holding their breath. Very common.
Now, you got so many wonderful things in your book, and it really takes you step by step. And what I like is you really do it in a non-judgmental, but a non-threatening way to get people to start doodling. And you put examples in here of your own, like with playing with the lines, of just making scribbles, and then you end up making a bicycle out of it.
Right, right. Well, that's part of sort of the finding something in clouds. I work that way a lot when I paint and when I draw, where I'll find a shape or randomly put down some scribbles and then turn the paper around or the book around and see what jumps out at me. And then all I have to do is finish it. And it makes for a lot of really quirky drawings that I would never have thought of on my own, different kind of poses that I wouldn't have thought of. And it's just fun. It's just a fun thing to do. So that's what that exercise is.
Yeah.
And I really think, keeping things as fun as possible and you'll do it more. and if you're just struggling over, a certain kind of drawing, especially in the beginning, I would just say don't do that for a little while, I have a story at the back of the book about riding a bicycle, and my husband bought me a new bike after 10 years of not having a bike. And he took me up the hill the first day, and I couldn't do it. And so I decided then no more hills. And I spent the next month just riding around my neighborhood and a lake that's nearby. And about a month later, I realized, I don't have to be good at this bike. I can just enjoy an easy ride around the lake. There's no reason I have to be good. And I was just feeling so wonderful about that. And I was also thinking, gosh, that applies to drawing too, and as I was riding home, I passed the hill that Steve, my husband, had taken me up that day. And do you know that I went right up that hill? And it's because I was out there riding the bike and just exercising those muscles, my leg muscles, going up little hills. I had not gone up a single large hill the whole month, and yet I was able to go right up the hill. And the same is true with drawing or anything else you want to do. If you can start in small, if it's overwhelming to start in a large way, start in these small, silly steps, because it definitely will get you there. It's just, I don't even think it's slower. I was going to say it might be a little slower, but I honestly don't think it's slower because you're enjoying it more, mm-hmm. and so you do it. Whereas if it's a very hard for you to do, you might skip a week, and
right. The pressure's off if you're enjoying it.
Yes.
just like going up the hill, it's like, oh, no, I don't have to go up the hill, but I'm out riding around. Well, I'll just try the hill. Why not?
That's right. It's almost like if you're enjoying yourself in general, then you're more likely to go up those hills because you feel good and mm-hmm. happy, and you feel just, you got to go around the lake already and see all those fun dogs and that beautiful water, mm-hmm.
Right. And I was just thinking, this would be such a great activity for a family of all ages, maybe on a Sunday afternoon, come back and spend 10 minutes or 20 minutes just doodling and showing each other's pictures and explaining what it is and just having some fun with it.
Yes. A lot of my online classes were parents who worked through the course with their children, all ages, starting at 4 even. And yes, I've gotten wonderful feedback from those people. They've really enjoyed looking through it together. Sometimes they'll take it to a restaurant and do it while they're waiting for their food and things like that. So, yes, I think it is. And it's a great way for, I think, adults, parents, you know, if they're afraid to draw, they kind of model that for their children.
Mm-hmm.
Unknowingly, it might even be just a small comment like, that head's too big or this, whatever. And what I'm kind of hoping to get you to realize is that the head being too big, quote unquote, is only true if you are really trying to draw a very realistic horse, for example. But if you look at contemporary illustration and all kinds of artwork throughout the ages, the heads are too small, they're too big, and they often add a lot of character when they're like that. So it's sort of like retraining you to just sort of accept it and laugh and appreciate it for what it is rather than, you know, being perfectly realistic.
Yeah, I have to say I've always shied away. I've always enjoyed drawing, but I've shied away a little bit because my mother was an artist, and it seemed like her artwork was so beautiful and so perfect. It was like I couldn't compete with her. But, you know, it's like as I grew up, it's like, well, I don't have to compete with her. I have my own style, my own way of doing things, and the artwork in the art world. And
that's right.
And that's, yeah. You know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder anyway. three people can look
so
at this. Go ahead.
Well, it can be very intimidating when someone around you is very accomplished. But like anything, the way we walk and the way we speak and the way we, you know, choose to spend our time, all of us have our own life to live and our own way of doing it. And my hope with this book is that it would bring people one step closer to finding out what it is they enjoy and what they like, and, you know, do they really even want to learn to draw realistically, you know? I was out cross-country skiing this winter, and I didn't really want to go, but I went because I had promised my husband back in the summer when it was warm and it was a long way away that I would go with him, and then suddenly it was January and I had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me when I was out there that getting good at cross-country skiing was the last thing on my list of why I was out there. I was out there to get fresh air, to get exercise, to accompany my husband, you know, all these other things to clear my mind, and getting good was way down on the list. And I went back to one of my online classes and asked them where getting good at drawing was on their list, and it also was pretty far down on the list. But I think a lot of people feel they even attempt to draw unless they're good, and like anything, learning a language or cross country skiing, you have to do it to get good.
Right. Well,
yeah.
I don't know. I've been playing golf for 30 years, and I had to readjust why do I play. It's not to be on the pro circuit. It's because I enjoy the company and the fresh air. It's a walk in the park, and you meet a lot of interesting people. It's not for the purpose of being really good at it.
Right. Right.
And that
it's
really
a wonderful, freeing thing to approach life that way, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's very freeing to just reevaluate the purpose on why you're doing something. And that's not just for the painting, too, or golf or skiing. It's in everyday life. It's like, what's the purpose and what's the point? Why do you have to be so perfect at this? Can it just be good enough?
That's right.
And just enjoy it and have fun. Now, can you explain your concept of what creativity is?
Ooh, gosh.
I thought I'd get a little more intellectual for a second here.
I do think it's what I said earlier, that sort of making unexpected connections. I think it has less to do with talent and skill and more to do with the willingness to fail and put yourself out there and look stupid and silly. I think creativity is one of those things that is hard to explain the benefit of, but if you're doing it, you know. I think creativity, it's just such a... it's sort of the only thing in my life that I'm passionate about. So it's almost hard to define it because it's just so important to me, this needing to express my creative self. Mm-hmm. I think there's lots of ways to express it. If you're a wonderful, if you love food and you're a creative cook, there's that. There's the visual. There's movement and dance. There's just all kinds of ways, even sports, mm-hmm. golf, uh-huh. of experiencing creativity within those things. Mine just happens to be visual, mm-hmm. visual art.
Now, I keep thinking about the schools and the art programs. When I grew up, we had art, elementary, junior high, high school, all kinds of classes. Now, you're lucky if you have one class available.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on art and where it's disappeared to in our school system and how it might affect, you know, the kids or the adults that you see now?
Well, I can just speak to the experience I had. I was teaching in my son's elementary school for, I did it for about 10 years because I have two kids 8 years apart. But during 2 years, I was doing it almost full-time as their artist in residence, and that position sort of came open because they had cut the art program. Mm-hmm. And I was very struck that a lot of kids that were very accomplished in my class, the art class, were struggling in other parts of school. And it made me very, very, very sad that an area where they could feel good about themselves at school had been basically cut out, you know, and, mm-hmm. or was just a temporary, you know, quick fix. And so that's one thing. I think that art and being creative, it, you know, a lot of different learning styles mm-hmm. of children, you know, they can, the art and creativity can speak to certain batch of children, and I feel like it's just completely being glossed over.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. It's really, really sad.
Well, people learn in different ways, too, and I think if you have an artistic eye, you see things and you see the world in a different way than you do very linear and regular, you know, the school model of learning math or, you know, graphic design or geometry or those things. And all those play a part into painting or drawing or what have you.
Yes. Well, it's, I mean, I've been amazed at the correlation between sort of science and art or even engineering and art. If you go to the School of Mines in Colorado, we used to live in Colorado, they put out a wonderful, you know, yearly essays and artwork magazine just to be practicing that creative side, even though they're primarily in you know, math or these subjects that seem like they're not that creative. And mm-hmm. so I do think that it all works together. Like I said earlier, I just feel like, you know, we sleep, for example, and we have a good night's sleep and we wake up refreshed and we have a good day. And then we have a good hard working day. We even get some exercise in there and then we're more likely to sleep well at night. Mm-hmm. And I feel that art is that sort of one of those things, you know, art and math or art and science or art and reading. One will help the other. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense to me to cut out something that's really, you know, a part of us. It's mm-hmm. who we are as humans, and it's very important.
Oh, yeah. And I think this is a way parents and other caregivers of children, young children and teens alike, if they could connect the art with real life with their children right now, then they don't really need to get it so much in the school if they have an outlet for it at some point,
right,
somewhere in their life.
Yes, and there is, I mean, the Internet has been wonderful for that. Of course, there's books out there, you know, my book,
uh-huh.
but, you know, hundreds and hundreds of others. And I just suggest pick one and try not to be afraid. It's, you know, pick one that looks fun to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. It's not important whether it's the right kind of book or the one that you should do, but the one that you respond to. And as a parent, I guess I'm speaking to parents, I would also argue that you should, you know, your children will grow up and have their own taste, but you're the one picking it now, and so, you know, or you could pick it together, but definitely pick something that you like because you will model that enthusiasm and that, mm-hmm. you know, and everything. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're talking today with Carla Sondheim. She is the author of The Art of Silliness, the creativity book for everyone. And we do need to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more in just a moment. So stand by for more Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox, in for Alan Cardoza, who's out doing what he does best out in the world. And we are doing what we do best, talking to someone who does exactly what she does best, and that is sharing the art of silliness. Carla Sondheim is the author of this great new book, The Art of Silliness, the creativity book for everyone. Draw, doodle, and play for 10 minutes a day. It is a fabulous book, and welcome back.
Thank you.
And I was thinking about when you were talking earlier about those unexpected connections, and then you have a great little exercise in the book called Connect the Dots. Now, if somebody's not driving right now and they have a little piece of paper in front of them, would you explain how you do that?
Yes, I have just random dots on the page. So if you have some paper, you can just put 5 to 8 dots on your page. And instead of thinking of it as a traditional numbered dot-to-dot exercise, or, you know, where you do straight lines from dot-to-dot, think of it as anything goes. So you can do scribbly lines, curvy lines, whatever. So then take your pen and basically make a line or a curved or loopy line to connect all the dots, and they can cross over each other. And then once you're done with that, see what you've got. Look at it. You know, drawing and being creative, I think, is a lot about observing and looking. So look at what you have and then turn it around and look at it from a different angle, and then turn it around again and again. And I would probably could guarantee that if you do that, something popped out at you, either a bird shape or a hippo or a face. And if it didn't, go ahead and add a few more lines to give yourself more information to go from. Did you try it?
Yes, I did. I either have a strange-looking horse in one direction or somebody with a really big nose.
That's right. And so whichever one you think would be the most fun to finish, do that. And, you know, there are a lot of other shading tips and things like that in the book, but that's the basic, you know, you always start with the basic lines and the basic shapes.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun because that's the kind of doodling I do, is dots and here and there and the circles and stuff. So it's kind of fun to actually take it to the next step and what is it I just drew, or what do I
right.
want it to be, or what does it look like?
And you might ask, well, what good is it? You know, that was stupid. That was silly. And that is the point. That's sort of one point is, in some ways you can say that about anything we do in life. I mean, you know, we're all, you know, trying to make our way. I mean, how we spend our time, I don't see anything wrong with spending it with something that's sort of worthless as long as you're enjoying it and bringing joy to others. And like you said, if you do this with a family or friends, you know, you're laughing and it's a starting point for, you know, other conversations and other things. Or the big nose guy, suddenly, you know, everyone in your family is trying to draw the one with the funniest nose and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it is, sometimes it will, you know, you'll do your drawing and you'll think, okay, that was dumb, you know, whatever. And then other times it'll be the springboard for something greater, and you just never know, so you have to do it.
Right.
If you don't do it, you will never do you'll never get the bigger part.
Right, and that is priceless, to be able to have those moments of joy and fun and be so in the moment, just like that small child that's just playing or getting excited about making one line.
Right.
Yeah, so we have a couple of listener questions, comments that came in, and I think we talked about one already, but it says, the psychological benefits of art in children's life is well established. Unfortunately, with budget cuts, they're the first to go and are almost non-existent in our schools. Do you believe programs and workshops like the ones you've created can help bridge this gap and bring creative outlet to help our kids become most well-rounded adults?
That's very nice. Thank you. I hope so. I mean, you know, in a way, ironically, the cuts in the schools is what sort of gave me my start as an art teacher. I had been an artist for a while, but it was because of the cuts in schools that I even had a chance to teach children. And then I had the confidence to start teaching adults because of all the hours I had spent in the classroom. So, yes, when something goes away, if the need is great enough, something else rises up.
Mm-hmm. And another question or comment was, I was so inspired by the description of your book on the Answers for the Family site that, I visited your site and then purchased a copy online for our family. Although we have not received the book yet, we are already doing several of the suggested exercises from your site, and it was great fun. We have dedicated a section of our wall in our TV room to posting our drawings, and I believe this is going to be a wonderful bonding and creative experience for all of us. And so with that in line, could you speak to that and also give us your website so other people can enjoy it?
Yes, my website is my name, Carla with a C, Sonheim.com, S-O-N-H-E-I-M. I have a blog at carlasonheim.wordpress.com. And yes, there's lots of free tutorials and, you know, little drawing exercises and things on my blog. And yes, I just love to hear when families do this together. I had a student take some online classes recently. It was a 21-day drawing class, and it's my serious drawing class. I mean, there's definitely, you know, fun exercises like the dot exercise, but you know, I'm having them draw realistically from items and shading and everything. And she did it with her four children, and they ended up having an art show at the end, and invited all their friends and family, and they had food, and you know, just took over their whole house with, you know, this temporary art installation. And I just think it's fabulous. It's teaching and learning, and it just can lead to so many things.
Yeah, and
so many good things.
Well, and you've got so many great things. I can't wait to look at your website because I've just been immersed in this book, trying out the different activities that you have here. And I do need to make more time to spend more time doodling and having fun with it and just scribbling around. But you have something called Solve the Equation. And I think that's interesting. It's X plus Y equals Z. So if X equals one thing and Y equals another, what does Z look like?
Right. And I've provided a drawing of two different animals, you know, X is one animal and Y is another animal. And so the challenge for that particular page exercise is to create a new animal using parts from both those animals.
So you get something that doesn't look like anything on Earth.
That's right. Which amazingly is the beginning of your children's storybook.
That sounds good. Now, you talk about fleepiness and fleep terms, F-L-E-E-P. So talk about what that is.
Yes, well, when my first book, Drawing Lab, was coming out, online classes were just coming to the forefront, and I had this idea to take my Drawing Lab exercises and put them in the worksheet format, and that's what the Art of Silliness has ended up now becoming, this book, this Art of Silliness book. Mm-hmm. But I did an online class called The Art of Silliness. And I had these worksheets, and I had told people that they would be doing writing stuff and drawing, but it was mostly drawing, but there would be lots of wordplay and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you know how worksheets, when you're in third grade, they might have a little word search puzzle or things like that. So mm-hmm. one of my, on the very first day, they were supposed to make up these words. And sleep happened to be the code that I had to type in by when I commented on somebody's blog. So it was very random. And but it turned out that people just absolutely loved making up these words, and then I had them make up definitions to these words, mm-hmm. and talk about creativity, and of course illustrations came out of that and everything. So the Land of Sleep was sort of born that first online class. We have the sleep language, and the queen, the silly queen is called the Sween, and all this stuff. So it's just another way to sort of, I don't know, be a little bit more childlike fantasy and get yourself out of your normal head. So yes, some of that is in the book as well. Sleep definitions and portraits of people that were prominent in the Land of Sleep, and designed the Sween a new hat, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Oh, I saw that. That looks really fun. And let's see. I mean, it's just you take everybody step by step throughout your whole book, and each activity is so much fun. And I just keep thinking, wow, parents, time to do this and do this with your kids. And even if your teenagers think it's silly or stupid or whatever, just have them start playing.
Yes, I have gone into high schools and taught, and they're definitely, they're a tough crowd for sure. They will do it. And by the end, I've had people, lots of students say, I want to take your online class. And, wow, this is way more fun than I thought. And, so you do have to, maybe parents aren't the ones for the teenagers to do it. Maybe it's a, I was a guest in the English professors, in the English class, some outsider. But yes, they're a tough crowd, but they definitely loosen up once they get started.
Now, something that might appeal to some teenagers is you talk about the exquisite corpse. And
yes.
Can you explain what that is and what it refers to?
Well, it refers to a party game way back, where artists would draw something and then leave just a small part of that drawing showing, and then they would give it to the next person to continue the drawing, and then they'd fold the paper over and only a small part of that drawing would be showing. And so it would end up with just maybe, a very nonsensical drawing. Once again, just pure fun and also maybe the spark of something more. And so the exercise I have is sort of a modification of that. I have these pages where you cut the page in half, and you do the top half is the head part and the bottom half is the body part, and then you can turn the pages and create all these different kinds of characters, mm-hmm. different from, once again, making those different connections you never thought of, and suddenly the elephant trunk with the bird tail is a little creature that you actually start doodling in your notebook for the next 6 months.
And what I also like, in the front of your book, you go through a glossary of terms, like you explain what blind contours are, or blobs, or doodles, or design, or negative space. What is negative space?
Well, negative space is the area between and around an object. So, for example, I have a statue of a giraffe, and the negative on my desk that I'm looking at right now. And the negative space is the space between the legs and the space between the tail and the back of the leg. Even the space between the ears and their horns, they don't have to be enclosed spaces, but it's sort of these different shapes. So you can look at something to draw and look at the actual giraffe, or you can let the negative shapes help you as well. And when you're drawing, just check those negative shapes, those background shapes, to make sure that they're as close as possible.
Yeah.
So negative space is something that, it's the space around it.
And if you concentrate on that, you definitely could see a different shape or object or whatever it is that you notice.
Right, and it helps also, you're looking at lines and forms rather than a giraffe. And sometimes when you name what you're drawing, your mind clicks over and says, oh, I know a giraffe. A giraffe has, you know, little horns with balls on the end, which they really don't. They have hair at the end often. And the males don't even have a hair because they sort of hide it off. So so they're just sort of straight up. So, you know, once again, negative drawing, paying attention to negative space can help you draw what you see rather than what you think you see. And it helps break down things into shapes and lines rather than, you know, elephant or giraffe or nose.
Okay. You have other fun little things. One's called Bananas for Breakfast. And that's part of your story of Squeep.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's part of your story with the Squeen, the queen, and or you call her Squeen. So can you talk about Bananas for Breakfast? Because all these little titles are so intriguing.
Well, the Squeen has a father, and he's called Skeen, and he always has bananas for breakfast. And so this exercise is just having you go get a banana, open it up, take a bite out of it, and then draw it in four different ways. I have you do it as a scribbly drawing, a blind contour, a contour drawing, and then a wrong-handed banana. So once again, you know, you get to have a snack, you get to draw. It's, you know, what a nice way to spend 10 minutes.
And the last part of it is finish the banana, which I take to mean you finish eating the banana.
That's right.
At that point. So there's a beginning, middle, and end on that. You also have complete the blobs, like hunt for blobs and those kind of things. But can you explain one of those exercises for us?
Yes, this is kind of what I've been passionate about for the last couple of years, is blob hunting, I call it. And blobs, to me, are just sort of irregular shapes that I find out and about, either or that I draw randomly on the paper myself. But mostly I find them in sidewalk cracks or brick or water stains, stucco, you know, wood grain, just shapes. And so all I do is go around and record the shapes I see. I don't worry about turning it into anything then. And I might get 10 or 12 in my sketchbook, and then I'll go back into the studio and do what we said earlier with the dot exercise and turn it around, you know, 90 degrees, keep turning it until something pops out at you, and then finish it. And 90% of the illustrations in The Art of Silliness were created that way. So I would say 90% of the animal illustrations. So all those strange-looking animals that
are in your book,
that someone would never think up on their own, certainly not me, come from that process. So that's a really fun, it's a fun way to work. And I taught this to adults and kids, and everybody loves it, and teens also do as well. So.
Well, and what's fun are the little characters that you've made out of these blobs. They are so cute. You've got a couple that I like that on Illustrate the Riddle page. It's little fish and then something else. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I would call it.
It's hard to know what they are. They end up having kind of, you know, combining an anteater nose with a little bird feathery head, mm-hmm. and then, you know, maybe a lizard tail. So it's I don't know. I have fun.
Well, that's the art of being silly and having fun. So you have another exercise that I think would be easy for people to do if they're sitting down at their table right now, or if you're going out for breakfast or lunch at this point. You have, it's called Scribbly Cups. While in a restaurant or a coffee shop, scribble 5 to 10 coffee cups in the space below. And you do provide spaces in your book, so it's almost like a personal workbook, too, that you could take with you.
Yes. The book is meant to be drawn in.
Right, so it's definitely your diary of silliness that you take with you.
The scribbly drawings, surprisingly, are some of the hardest things for adults to do and to get their head around, because I'm basically having you look at the coffee cup and then do a drawing in less than 10 seconds, probably even 5 to 10 seconds. And all you're trying to do is get the essence of that drawing cup, get, you know, it, it would be nice if it looked sort of like a drawing, a cup at the end, but that's not really the point. It's more looking. And this is a modification from gesture drawings, which is the classic drawing exercise that you'd find in all art schools. But you're basically spending more time looking, and you're trying to get a quick rendering of the cup. And when you work that fast, you're going to have lots of failures. So, it's one other thing to help you, not take everything quite so seriously. But just the looking and the moving your hand while looking will improve your ability to render the cup realistically if you'd like to later.
That sounds great. So if you're ready to play and get into the art of silliness, I do encourage you to go get Carla Sondheim's book, The Art of Silliness. I imagine it's available everywhere, including your website. And could you give the website number again?
Yes, at www.carlasondheim.com. And I'm also at theartofsilliness.com will also take you to my website.
And, of course, we'll have that information on our website as well if you want more. Thank you so much for joining us today, Carla. I so enjoyed your book. It was so much fun to sit there and play and doodle. And now all my doodling is okay.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And please join us again next week for more Answers for the Family right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.